Hello and welcome to another episode of Bank FinTech Fusion. This is Philip Ryan, Director of Communications at CCG Catalyst. I'm here at Money 2020 in Las Vegas, and I got the chance to catch up with Andrew Nash, who manages identity services at Capital One, shortly before his fireside chat with Dave Birch. And we got to talk about a lot of issues around authentication and identity in the digital world. Welcome, Andrew.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
So what first drew you to financial services? You could have done anything in the world, and yet here you are in financial services. Was there something, a particular problem you wanted to solve, or what was the attraction?
You know, I wish they'd let me know I could have done anything at all, because maybe there would have been a different answer. But seriously, in the identity space, depending on what part of the problem you want to go solve, if you're interested in the problem of how do you do something that's significant and useful for consumers in the identity space, and you want to deal with information trust at some level, there are really only kind of three verticals that make sense there. Something like insurance, something like mobile operators, but the one that our research shows that comes out on top in terms of trusted expectations is the financial services area. It's like people feel comfortable that banks are managing their money and that they will do a good job with their information as well.
What is the greatest lesson that you've learned in your career? And tell us a bit about your journey through the financial services space.
Originally, I was engaged doing a bunch of work in the security space, working for RSA Security. Did a bunch of startups at various times. I've been in and out of large companies. I ran identity services at PayPal and at Google. Then did a couple more startups and then ended up at Capital One. In all of that, it turns out that the most interesting discovery is that what you really have to do is identify the simplest problem that you can actually deal with and then go and solve it and build on it. And so the version of this I sometimes use that most people probably won't get anymore is that we used to have these enormous directory structures based around X500, which like we'll have the one global directory that will solve all problems. And we spent years working on it. And then we ended up with a different kind of directory structure called LDAP, which was like, hey, you build out a small directory, and then somebody else builds out one, and you connect them. And then you get to like share information, and that stuff worked. So starting small, doing something useful, and then building it out, as opposed to spending 10 years on an architecture that never gets utilized, life's too short. You know, it's like I'd rather actually, and you learn so much. If you go in for the large-scale architecture, the challenge is that invariably it turns out that there was a bunch of stuff you didn't understand at the beginning. And so the quicker you can get down to cases, the quicker you come to understand what are the real challenges and problems and maybe what are some better solutions are.
Of course, Steve Jobs said simplicity is difficult, right? So simple problems often have complicated solutions.
Yeah, I totally agree. One of my favorite statements is actually from John Adams, the president originally, who said, if I'd had more time, I would have written less.
So what is the greatest challenge that you're facing right now at Capital One in identity services?
You know, I think the greatest challenge actually is that the world is moving really, really fast. There are a lot of, if you look over the last 2 years, the set of new technologies and the new engagements that have occurred over that time, the number of players that are trying to create various types of ecosystems. The biggest challenge is actually trying to run fast enough to actually ensure that we are engaging in the right set of technologies and coming up with the set of answers that's future-proofed and makes sense in that whole space. And literally, the complexity level is so high. There are so many divergent ways that you could actually handle a set of the problems in the identity space at the moment. Working out which of them might be successful is, you know, what bets to place is, I think, the biggest challenge.
So Capital One is a bit of a startup itself in the banking world, being just 25 or so years old. And I think is a little more accustomed to working with startups than maybe some other financial institutions. But what is the key to banks and fintechs finding effective ways to work together?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, I've done a lot of startups over time. You know, the one adjective I would apply to startups is scrappy. you know, there's this sense of you like you do whatever it takes to get like things done as quickly as possible. And often the challenge between fintechs and larger banks is impedance matching. So it's like this, these time frames at which you need to move. If you're a startup, you know, every week that someone delays signing an agreement with you, like just puts you in like extreme conditions from a, you know, runway perspective. A lot of the challenge is around impedance matching. But I think the other challenge for both banks and fintechs is trying to come together from a trust perspective. So banks are highly regulated, as we all know. Fintechs are scrappy and like are looking for ways to break all the rules. To connect the two of them, the challenge is how do we do the impedance matching in a way that allows us to have the banks feel more comfortable within their regulatory constraints to try some, you know, different things. And then the fintechs understanding that the solutions they're providing, if they want to interact with large-scale banks, have to actually fit into that regulatory space at some point. And so you just can't like burn the world down from a fintech perspective if you're going to work with banks because, you know, the regulation will catch up with you. You know, sometimes I think it's a maturity question, which like understanding that maybe there are some trade-offs that we can make in various ways that would allow the solutions to be more tractable for banks. So I think that's the kind of area that I would look to.
It does seem that the regulators are a little more open to bank fintech relationship. Just the FDIC was here at Money 2020, where we are, and the OCC, and they're saying positive things about it. So that's something, right?
No, I totally agree. It's you know, banking is like this enormously old, you know, set of institutions, and still though, from a financial fintech perspective, the speed is so different, right? The rate at which you want to affect change just creates interesting challenges. But I agree. I think that we're seeing good movement, so that's encouraging.
So say you're a bank or say you're a startup and you've decided to work with the other guy, so you can wear whichever hat you like because you've been in both. What does success look like for a bank fintech collaboration?
It kind of depends on the lens that you place on it. Obviously, there are technology answers in that space. The one that I like a lot is, and we see it a lot more in places like the UK, where fintechs in some respects have gotten a lot more traction than they have in the US, the user experience engagement, like the models that they have that are creating useful solutions for consumers, that whole user experience kind of aspect, I think, is one of the great values that fintechs can bring in. It's like how to think about a different model that is going to be useful to your consumer. Working out how to integrate that into the banking context, I think, creates really great potentials for success.
Which currently developing technology do you see having the greatest potential benefit for financial services? Obviously, we hear a lot about AI here at Money 2020. There's quantum computing, blockchain, all these sorts of things. What is the one that you really have your eye on as making a difference?
Well, by definition, I'm, you know, highly prejudiced and, you know, single-minded in this whole space. It's frankly, it's identity. And the reason is that, you know, shout out to David Birch, you know, Identity is the New Money is the book that he wrote a few years back. The information that we have to share is, in many respects, creating an opportunity for new types of payment mechanisms to be created. And they are divorced from physical mechanisms like cards or accounts or checkbooks. And part of our life interaction as individuals with an identity, payments and what we have in terms of financial transactions, it's just like one of the sets of attributes that's associated with us. So in many respects, as we move into a digital world, the enabler for all of this really is not just identity, but the verified information techniques and sharing, particularly as we're moving into a world which allows us to ensure that consumers have better control over that. That to me, I think, is one of the most exciting things. A lot of the other things you reference are technology kinds of things, and they're all useful, but I don't know that they are necessarily going to be as ground-changing as some of the identity potentials.
So some industry experts have said that financial institutions may have a role to play in managing identity. I could point to Chris Skinner, I guess, in this regard. Is Capital One Confirm a way to do this?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a large chunk of the reason that I'm actually working with Capital One, is that there is this enormous potential to, and I hesitate to use the word manage identities because there's this kind of paternalistic kind of aspect to that. In some sense, it's more helping people facilitate their own information and their own interactions. And that, I think, financial services have a great potential for. In many cases in the identity space, we have this view where we talk about high assurance kinds of aspects to the way that we deal with identity. The financial institutions have been living under a set of regulated requirements that mean that they're actually really good at partitioning the way that identity information is used. There is a high degree of care and, frankly, there's a high degree of regulation that looks to ensure that financial institutions do, in fact, deal effectively with the expectations of consumers around the way their information gets used. So financial institutions are kind of a natural fit to do this. And Capital One, as you said, is very much kind of, the startup guy, and at least in the banking credits kind of space. So it's kind of a natural fit in a lot of respects, I think.
I remember Capital One, too, was those nine dots that you logged in on mobile. I remember no one else was doing something. That was a very creative use. So I've heard about this concept of decentralized identity. Is this something you think banks can take part in?
Yeah, this is the one that will get me into trouble. And the reason is that my wife works for Microsoft and is, in fact, one of the smartest people in the identity space. And she is driving a bunch of the decentralized identity stuff for Microsoft. So we have this conversation on a regular basis. Like, well, is this going to be useful? Where is it going to be useful? And the answer, you asked a very specific question, which is it going to be useful to banks? And I think that's the right way to frame it. Decentralized identity fundamentally is the concept that you or I get to create our own identity, and then we exchange some set of cryptographic information which allows other people to be able to recognize us when we, move around the web. If you're in a low assurance environment, that stuff works reasonably well. There's a lot of conversation in both the decentralized identity space and also in the world of SSI about trust frameworks. The challenge is that the way that the technologists in those spaces think about trust is very much like a cryptographic level of trust. And strictly, it's more like cryptographic agreements, like you have a set of keys that I can recognize. When you look at what a financial institution requires in terms of the trust level that I have to have to know that it's actually you and like the right outcomes are going to occur, not only fraud, but to ensure that we do the right things with your information and finances, there's a huge gap at the moment between the cryptographic level of trust that we talk about in that space and the regulated, governed trust frameworks that we actually need to have in not only financial services, but insurance and a bunch of other those regulated environments. Decentralized identity of all of the current technologies, I have the most hope for, but it's got a fairly long way to go to actually deal with those trust connections in a way that would certainly let the financial institutions leverage effectively.
Final question. In the expo hall walking around, I couldn't help but notice there seemed to be a lot of identity solutions. I don't know if you've had a similar impression. How do you view this? Coming from a bank, obviously all these guys would be so excited to talk to you. How do you approach this, all these startups out there that are starting to take this on?
Being a startup guy, I love to encourage startups in this space. One of the conclusions you reach after you've been around the traps a few times is you realize that often folks that come into this space have kind of a simplistic view of what identity is all about. And so getting from the, what's often a core of really useful capabilities and technology into a space where you can deal with what's really a fairly complex and quite subtle set of interactions in the identity space, this is a real challenge. And so you see, for example, biometrics companies that are doing a great job around, you know, recognition of various, you know, personal characteristics in one way or another. But you hear this conversation, which is, oh, I'm a biometrics authentication service and I do identity. And it's like, it's a valid part of the, you know, the space, but it's not actually a complete answer. There's a lot of other parts. The big challenge for startups is being able to form effectively the partnerships that allow them to fit their piece into the rest of the puzzle. And kind of like what I was talking about before, which is, you know, finding the minimal set that you can be really effective at. Having startups bound the expectations about what they're actually going to be able to solve. So instead of like, I will solve, you know, all world hunger associated with identity, being really specific about the part that you really can do and being really clear about it is incredibly helpful, because it allows you to work out, all right, well, I can fit this piece in here, and then if I can get it to interact with these other five pieces, then now we really have a solution that might do something. The challenge as an entrepreneur is always that you're busily casting a vision for like where the world is going to be, and invariably you end up overselling the concept and the, you know, the capabilities. Being able to pull back and like understand and literally say, hey, this is how far we can get, and we think we can do a really good job at that, and here's how you get the rest of the way. That takes kind of a mature entrepreneur to be able to do.
Yeah, because your investor is saying, how are you going to be a $1 billion business if you're just one of these pieces of the puzzle?
That's exactly the driver. You know, as soon as you deal with VCs, there's this question of, so, you know, prove to me you're going to give me my, you know, 25x return in the next 3 years or whatever. It's a challenge. It's a pressure we all face. And, you know, once I had a CEO at a startup that I was at who made the comment once that buying from a startup is fundamentally an irrational decision. And so your goal as a startup is to help people like make that irrational jump in order to like buy your stuff. And so you're into this like mode of, you know, trying to create a vision for where you can get to. You just have to learn how to temper it in a way. And my own experience in startups is the fastest way I established trust with the clients that we had was to literally say, you know, hey, we here's what we can get you to. And like, we're going to go further, but this is the reality point. It just develops a level of trust that actually gets you way further than you might expect.
Andrew, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure, and I hope you enjoy the rest of Money 2020.
Thank you. It's been great to share with you.